enters the PAL show with Stan Lomax, the famous Yankee clipper Joe DiMaggio, and the boys and girls of the PAL.
Good morning, everyone. This is Stan Lomax with another PAL show. The Police Athletic League goes on the air every Saturday morning over WOR to show New York what its youngsters can do. Now, on our show today, you'll hear PAL singers, instrumentalists, and actors. As the highlight of the week, you'll hear a group of PAL boxers discuss their plans. And on the Sports Forum, you'll hear PAL baseball players interviewing the Yankee clipper, Jolding Joe DiMaggio. The chorus from the Patrolman Robert Holmes and Floyd Horton Youth Centers start us off with one of their very fine spirituals, I Couldn't Hear Nobody Pray.
Couldn't hear nobody pray. Couldn't hear nobody pray. Oh, way down yonder by myself. And I couldn't hear nobody pray.
In the valley.
Couldn't hear nobody pray.
On my knees.
Couldn't hear nobody pray.
Talking over.
We'll have some more music for you just a little later on. The PAL acting company's on stage now, ready to do an original farce in our dramatic workshop. Some of you may remember our Thanksgiving play, the little sister who took matters into her own hands and solved the John Alden-Miles Standish situation for her brother. Well, this morning, we present the further and even more complicated adventures of these two young people. And as our curtain goes up in the dramatic workshop, you can see Joan, obviously very upset about something, racing home from school.
Jack, wake up,
I'm awake. Come on in.
Jack, for heaven's sake, get up.
What's the matter? Why all the excitement?
Well, I must say, I don't think that's what I would call brotherly gratitude.
What should I be so grateful about so early in the morning?
Early in the morning. Do you or do you not have a special test this morning?
I do.
At what time?
At 10 o'clock. Why?
It is now exactly 23 minutes past 11.
What?
Honestly, when Mother and Father went away, they thought they could trust me to get you up and to school on time. I'm sorry they misplaced their trust.
Okay, but what about my test? Well, she'll give me a zero for the test, and that means I flunked the course. And if I flunked the course...
That means you'll be suspended from school until you make it up. And I would not like to be present when Father learns about that.
Oh, so what do we do, Joni?
Don't call me Joni. It's very undignified.
All right, but what do we do?
Well, fortunately, you have a sister of more than average initiative.
Good. But what has my more-than-average initiative sister done?
Well, it just so happens that I met Miss Prentice at school, and she asked me, since I am the more responsible, if not the elder member of the family, why you hadn't appeared to take the test. She seemed annoyed, to say the least.
Uh-oh, the axe.
I think I can safely say I forestalled that.
Oh, good.
I told her you were desperately ill.
Oh, Joan.
I had to think of something.
Well, what do I have?
Well, that was a poser. I couldn't think of a sufficiently imposing medical term on the spur of the moment, so I told her the doctor was with you when I left. Now, I was just on my way back here to get his verdict.
Good for you. You're my favorite sister.
And your only one.
Point killer. You saved me.
Not yet. Miss Prentice made me promise I'd tell her what you had the moment I found out.
And what do I have?
I haven't found out yet.
Well, think fast, Mr. Modo. She'll expect you to call.
I know. I read something in a book the other day. Jack, I hate to tell you this, but you have hypersenescence.
What?
Hypersenescence.
Well, what's that?
I don't know, but you have it. It sounds dreadful and mysterious enough. So I bet Miss Prentice doesn't know what it is. I'll call her and tell her about it. Oh, yes, Miss Prentice. What? The doctor says it is very serious. Well, naturally, the doctor wouldn't tell me about his chances for recovery, but he did think we should get Mother and Father back here right away. Oh, yes, I think it is catching. Yes, I'll let you know if there's any change. Goodbye.
Say, did you hear about Jack? He has some terrible disease.
Yeah, and I heard we all might get it. There might be an epidemic.
My mother was talking with Mrs. Webster on the telephone, and she said that she heard from Mrs. Niedlinger that somebody told her that a lot of people in town had it already.
I always hear that.
Well, this time I believe it. I know how fast the disease can get around. And Jack was all around town delivering Christmas things just the other day. Why, what's the matter, Peggy? I might be getting it. Jack and I went to Bessie Stern's New Year's Eve party together. Do you suppose you can catch whatever it is Jack has kissing somebody?
Gosh, I don't know. As a matter of fact, I guess it's one of those diseases doctors don't know much about.
You might get it just sitting next to somebody at school. You know something? I don't think it's safe for any of us to go to school tomorrow.
I think you're right. I'm going to tell the fellows it's not safe to go to school on account of the epidemic.
I don't know anything about it, Pete. All I know is that Andy Provkin said that Milt Renner told him the doctor said it wasn't safe for any of us to go to school. According to what I hear, this disease is something you just can't stop once it gets started. Well, I mean penicillin or sulfa drugs or nothing can stop it. I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm going to stick home and pray that I don't get whatever it is Jack's got.
Of course, my mother's always very careful about such things. And she said she was going to consult Dr. Bailey about it. But he's at some medical convention or something. So she said it was best to be absolutely safe about it and not go to school until she finds out for sure what it is Jack Hollister has and how bad it is. She always says that she'd rather be safe than sorry. So I'm going to stay home. And I guess that's what everybody else is going to do. Dad's even going to close the store so that he won't catch whatever it is.
As a result of the epidemic, or threat of one, the entire town of Falls Valley was at a virtual standstill today. The schools were deserted, and many shopkeepers and businessmen did not open their stores and offices. All places of public gathering were securely closed, and the streets were all but deserted by the citizens who feared they might be the next to be stricken with this dread and mysterious disease. Authorities estimated the loss of business would run close to $1 million, and every effort was being made to isolate the disease and control it. As a public service, this station will bring you a complete coverage of this disastrous tragedy. Later in the evening, we expect to present a special broadcast by Dr. Frederick H. Dresser of the State Board of...
Jeepers, Joan, did you hear that?
Yes, I heard it.
Think of that. Everything closed up. Schools, theaters, stores, businesses, everything. Boy, I guess I'm lucky I didn't get out today. I might have caught that disease.
No, I don't think you would. Not yet.
You know, I noticed something. That guy on the radio, he talked a lot about it, but he never mentioned what the disease was that everybody has.
Maybe he doesn't know.
Oh, those radio fellas know everything.
I don't think anybody's quite sure what the disease is, except me.
Nobody except you. Well, how do you know?
Well, I told Miss Prentice what you had.
What I have?
Certainly. This dread disease that everybody's afraid of catching is the disease I told Miss Prentice you have. And I'm sorry I ever started it. I just wanted to keep you out of trouble, and now I've started trouble for the whole town. You heard what the man said on the radio. Millions of dollars of lost business, all because of me. I'll never do anything like this again.
Oh, come on, Joan. Just think. You've probably saved the town from being ravaged by this terrible disease, whatever it is, and they'll probably give you a medal for it.
Not when they stop being hysterical long enough to look up the disease in the dictionary, they won't.
Say, what is this disease anyway? What was it you said I had?
Hypersenescence. I didn't know what it meant, but I looked it up in the medical dictionary. And the whole town will probably lynch me when they find out what it means.
Gosh, what does it mean?
Acute old age.
Acute old age?
The whole town is trying to keep from catching acute old age.
In that PAL Dramatic Workshop production, Joan was played by Vivian Law and Jack by Jerry Sandler. Alan Dunlop played Peggy, Jack Boris was Milk, Dorothy McGinn was Fran. Lenny was played by Hunter Yeager, and Lucy by Aileen Day, and Hilly Elkins was the radio newscast. David Hoffman, John Giuliano, and Jerry Prezio handled the sound effects, and Arthur Black was the associate director. And now, from young actors, we move along to a young PAL pianist, Mildred Rucker. When you ask Mildred how old she is, she says very proudly, 11 and a half. And the way she plays piano, it sounds as if she spent most of those 11 and a half years practicing. This morning, she's going to play the Minute Waltz. The story goes, Chopin got the idea for this popular composition, watching a little dog try to catch his own tail. Here's the Minute Waltz and Mildred Rucker. Enthusiastic reception, you can tell just how proud the PAL is of Mildred Rucker. And you know, the PAL has always had a lot of very, very fine singers and dancers in its company, and we're going to be mighty proud of the boxers who've entered the Golden Gloves boxing tournament. Now, whether the young fellows win or lose, the PAL knows they'll do themselves proud. So last night in the WR studio, I interviewed the several young men who are going to represent the Police Athletic League in the Golden Gloves. And here's a recorded report of what they told me. Boxing is a popular sport in the PAL, and every center has its boxing ring, and there's always a couple of kids out there flailing away at each other with those pillow-sized mitts. They get plenty of instruction, too, from their boxing coaches. And what's more, they have a swell time learning to box and to build up their bodies. In the summer, they get a chance to show their wares at the weekly outdoor boxing shows. When a street is closed off to traffic and a ring is set up, and the neighbors are invited to come in and see the action. In the winter, the PAL has its indoor tournament, which gets underway next Friday, that's January 10th, at the Kiley Center, 202 Vanderbilt Avenue, Brooklyn, at 8 p.m. Now, tonight, we've got a group of the very best boxers in the PAL here. Now, these boys have been picked, along with some others, to represent the PAL in the Golden Glove. And we've got their boxing directors here, too, like Justin Cerutis and Police Sergeant William Spengler. Sergeant Spengler was Olympic heavyweight champion in 1920. Mr. Cerutis is the former intercollegiate and Golden Gloves heavyweight boxing champion. So you can see, both of these men know their boxing. Sergeant Spengler, you got a swell-looking group of boys here. Are they going to win those Golden Gloves?
You bet they are. They're going to try real hard.
Well, that's fine. How many boys do you have boxing now in the PAL?
We have about 350 boys.
And all those boys had their boxing instruction, their first instruction in the PAL?
Yes, they're all been trained the first time at the PAL.
Well, that's fine. And now if I can get in Justin Cerutis here for just a moment. Justin, how about these boys of yours? Are you confident they're going to come through with the title the way the sergeant just said?
Well, I'll back up the sergeant 100%, Stan. And I think we're going to show these other men just that we can box as good as any other boxer in any other time.
And how about all these boys? They're all fine, trim-looking boys. Are they all strictly PAL products?
Yes, they are, Stan, every one of them.
Well, that's fine. And now who's this young fellow right behind you? We'll have him step up. And what's your name?
My name is Jimmy Wild.
And how old are you?
16.
And what division are you going to box in?
I'm 18.
Is this the first opportunity you've ever had to go into the Golden Gloves?
Yes, sir.
And how do you figure you're going to make out?
Well, I guess as good as a chance the other fellow.
That's the stuff. You got two hands and they got two hands. How about your coach? Who's your coach?
My coach is Mr. Joe Armstrong.
And did I ask you what precinct you're from?
From the 52nd in the Bronx.
52nd in the Bronx. That's swell. There's the Bronx. And now here's another young fellow right in back of you. Looks to be a little larger. What's your name?
Eddie Bravana.
And what's your weight?
147, welterweight division.
In the welterweight division. Yeah. And have you learned to box in the PAL?
Yes, I did learn. I have been learning how to box in the PAL. They've been teaching me all they know.
That's swell. And did you box in the summer events they had this year?
Well, I boxed in some, but then I couldn't box anymore in the PAL. For the PAL acts as a cradle to the unexperienced boxers.
I see, and they don't match an experienced boxer like you against a youngster just starting in. Is that the idea?
Yes, well, that's what they've been trying to do.
That's fine. And who's your coach?
Mr. Cerutis.
Mr. Cerutis, and what precinct are you from?
Precinct 9.
Well, that's swell, and now the young fellow in back of you. Here comes a young man up wearing a Navy discharge emblem. What's your name?
Gene O'Connor.
Gene, what precinct are you from?
Webb Churchill.
Have you boxed in the Golden Gloves before, haven't you?
Yes, I have boxed in the Golden Gloves before, Mr. Lomax.
And you're back now. I suppose you're going into the Golden Gloves again this year?
No, I'm not. Not in good condition right now to enter them, Mr. Lomax.
I see. You haven't had a chance to get into shape. Well, I suppose with the PAL, though, you're around helping them and helping develop these fellows that are here tonight, eh?
That is correct.
How about the boys? How do they look to you?
Look very good.
And incidentally, you did pretty well in the Golden Gloves before you went away to war, didn't you? How far did you go?
Up to the finals, sir. Well,
that's as good as you can go. Thanks a lot. And now, who's this right in back of you?
Tony Massagno.
Tony, where are you from?
102nd Precinct, Richmond Hill.
And what division do you box in?
Lightweight, 135.
135. And did you start out right off in the PAL?
Is that
where you got your first boxing experience?
Yes, sir, I did, Mr. Lamar.
And who are your coaches?
Well, Etal Penn is a very good coach, and he's been taking us along.
And how many bouts have you had in the past?
Well, I only had one bout. And I come out pretty good. I won.
Well, I guess you must come out pretty good, or you wouldn't be with this team that the PAL is getting together. And who's this right in back of you? Here's another young fellow.
George Clark.
George, where are you from?
From the 24th Precinct.
And what division do you box in?
160-pound class.
160, that's the middleweight.
Middleweight.
George, you're pretty well put together. Who's your boxing coach?
Chick Suggs.
Chick Suggs, the old professional.
Yes.
Are there any other fellows from your center entered the Golden Gloves this year?
Yes, there's quite a few. There's
a bunch of them?
Yes, there are.
And how do the gang feel? They feel one of you fellows are going to bring back a title, eh?
Well, we feel we're just as good as the next fella, and we both have two hands. We're going to do our best.
Well, that's swell.
We'll get back to the more aesthetic aspects of the Police Athletic League now with Suzanne Newman. A young 15-year-old is developing quite a song style. When she auditioned for us, the authorities noted on her card, can really sell a song. And she's going to show us how it's done with the current item called Somewhere in the Night. Meet Suzanne Newman. Applause, and there's certainly lots of it today, is for Suzanne Newman, who sang Somewhere in the Night so well. You know, almost any Saturday afternoon during the baseball season when the Yankees are in town, you'll find a couple hundred to thousand PAL baseball fans right there in the stands. When Joe DiMaggio pulls one way into those left field seats and makes one of those patent DiMaggio running catches in the far reaches of center field, the loudest and the longest cheer come from our PAL delegation. Well, Joe is giving us a good start on the new year by coming over to answer the questions of the PAL baseball experts. And we'll see if we can give Joe a good start on the new year with an appropriate reception. That's the idea. And now for the next few minutes, I'm going to call balls and strikes while Joe answers the questions. The hit sign is on Joe, and here come the questions.
We're all Yankee rulers, Joe. And the first thing we'd like to know is, are the Yankees going to win the pennant this year?
Well, that's starting me off with a tough one, all right. However, I think the Yankees will be right up in there. We have two teams to beat, and I think that's the Boston Red Sox and the Detroit Tigers. However, we could have a dark horse. I know we have a lot of rooters here of different ball clubs, but we'll be in there plugging.
I saw you play twice last summer when I went to the stadium with the PAO. You always go in the right direction for a fly ball. How can you tell so quick?
Well, I don't know. After last year, it looks like I have to have a little more practice. But that's something I acquired when I was a youngster. We did an awful lot of playing around there with the boys, and we didn't get enough practice. I say that. We were out there every day, or as much time as we could spare, and had somebody hit fly balls out there and see if we can get a quick jump on the ball. As a matter of fact, we used to have little arguments to who has got the best jump on the ball, and that's what we did. We just practiced an awful lot.
Mr. DiMaggio, I notice you always stand at the plate with your feet wide apart. Is that a good idea for us to follow?
Well, not necessarily. I wouldn't say that. Because I stand with my feet far apart, you take a fellow like Williams who stands close, he keeps his feet close together, and he gets twice as much effect out of his drives, I would say, than I do. But I would say this to you fellas, to take a comfortable stance at the plate. Balance yourself and take a light bat or a bat that feels good to you. And that way, you have no obstacles to overcome. You feel comfortable, that's the way you should stand at the plate.
Joe, do you always swing for home runs every time you bat?
Well, I guess a good deal of us do swing for home runs, but it's not a good policy. I'll tell you why, because you hit a home run when you least expect it. But you'll take ball players, they want to see how far they can hit a ball. But I would give you a little bit of advice on that and say to try to just meet the ball on the good part of the bat, and you'll find you'll get just as much distance.
We like to play baseball better than any other sport. Did you practice a lot when you were our age?
Well, as I said before, you can't get enough practice. The more practice you get, the better you're going to be. Even today, ball players, myself, I'm out there in the mornings 2 or 3 hours before a ball game, chasing ground balls or fly balls, and when I go into a slump, I try to get a little extra batting practice, trying to hit the ball right on the nose so I can get some line drives and trying to bat myself right out of the slump.
Joe, is there any special rule for training that you could tell us about?
Well, there are a lot of rules, but I think there are a couple important ones. To eat well, and one other thing is to get proper rest. As a matter of fact, when I was a young guy, we used to have fellas like Joe Cronin give us talks, and he told us to take the older people's advice on how to play the game. And you know you can't go wrong when you listen to fellas like Cronin, Lefty O'Doul, and Bucky Harrison, fellas like that. And you fellas should do the same thing because I think they have played the game a little bit longer professionally, and they can give you an awful lot of tips.
Mr. DiMaggio, were you scared the first time you played before a big crowd at the Yankee Stadium?
Well, I wasn't exactly brave. I tell you, when I played on the Coast League, we didn't play to crowds like we did up here. What scared me more than anything else, I think, was the size of the stadium and other ballparks. However, 50 and 60,000 people, when they let out a roar, you could hear it all over the ballpark and maybe for 4 or 5 blocks after that. It is quite a thrill, though, more than it is being scared.
Say, Joe, who's the toughest pitcher for you in the American League?
Oh, boy, I've had many a tough pitcher. But the one that stands out in my mind is a fellow named Mel Hodder, who is pitching for the Cleveland Indians. I think he's pitching relief pitch now. However, he doesn't have what we would say as much as Bobby Feller. His fastball is not quite as fast. He doesn't have as good a fastball or a curveball as Bobby Feller or some of the fellows in the league. But every time he throws his glove out, it seems like he's got me 0 for 4.
Did you play in an amateur league like the PAL when you were our age?
Yes, I've played in many an amateur league, but the one like the PAL, I would say, is the San Francisco Boys Club, which is out in San Francisco in California, and I played with the boys' club in our district. We had several teams consisting of 110 pounds, 145 pounds, and 175 pounds. I was 11 years old, and I played on a 110-pounder, and I want to say I got my early training there, and it certainly was very helpful me today.
Joe, did you ever hit one into the new section in the left field bleachers in the stadium?
Yes, fortunately I did. I will say that there has been three hit there. Greenberg was the first one to hit one, and I was playing center field, and when I saw that ball hit, I said, gee, that's quite a wallop. I'd like to hit one like that myself. Well, the following week, I managed to get a hold of one and hit one right there, exactly in the same spot. And a week later, I got very lucky and hit another one. So there's been the three hit there, and I'm very lucky to have hit two.
Well, we certainly thank you for being here today, Joe DiMaggio. And by the way, if any of you people listening would like to come to the Mutual Guild Theater some Saturday morning and see the sports personalities in person and watch our young performers do their stuff, we'd be mighty glad to have you. All you have to do is to send your name and address to the PAL, care of station WOR, New York 18, and we'll see that you get tickets without any charge, naturally. And I'll tell you that it's really worth the trip over here just to watch our chorus go into action, especially when they sing something like Trees, which they do right now. Saturday morning at 10:30, WOR present another PAL show with more young singers, instrumentalists, and actors from the Police Athletic League, and another famous personality for our sports forum. I hope you'll all join us next Saturday morning for the PAL show. PAL Show was produced from the WOR Mutual Guild Theater by Roger Bauer, under the musical direction of Emerson Buckley. William Mathis, producer for the PAL, and Arthur Ford is musical director for the PAL. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You're listening to St.